A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brialso Lake puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
All right, welcome into another Jazz Notes podcast here. We are brought to you by KSLSports.com. My name is Cleon Wall. Ben Anderson joining me here in the studio. The Jazz beat the Minnesota Timberwolves. All is put right in the world, according to Jazz fans. And the Jazz looked like a totally different team, Ben, than they did against Minnesota just a couple of nights before that.
Yeah, they were significantly better, I thought, against Minnesota last night, clearly. And a lot of that just had to do with some of the adjustments they made. But, you know, this is a very talented Jazz team. I look back at the season so far, and I'm thinking, you know, they beat a terrible Warriors team and beat them easily. Otherwise, the Jazz schedule is just loaded with good wins so far. I mean, you know, Oklahoma City's a pretty good team. You beat Milwaukee, who might be the best team in the NBA so far. And you beat Philadelphia. I mean, you've got a lot of nice wins. Minnesota's looking like a playoff team. Phoenix has been good so far.
And I want to focus first and foremost on Rudy Gobert to start out with. On Monday, when the Jazz played the Timberwolves, he kind of sagged back, and Karl-Anthony Towns rained three-pointers down upon the Jazz.
Yeah.
This game, not so much. He goes out and he plays a little bit farther out. Karl-Anthony Towns has a very subpar, well, less than subpar game, you could even say. Is this why Rudy is the best center out there right now, at least when it comes to defense? And is this why he's the best defensive player? Because not only are you saying you need to protect the rim, you're now saying, Rudy, your guy makes threes. We need you to go out there and actually go out there and contest him, not just protect the rim. Is this why he's the best defensive player right now? Because really, he's to the point right now where he can do both. He can play a little bit of both. He's more effective near the rim, but he's still pretty effective when he goes out and he guards a guy like Karl-Anthony Towns.
And that had been an issue in the past. You know, the Jazz used to get killed with stretch bigs. And certainly they did Monday night, and they still lost that game. But Rudy Gobert has adapted. He's learned how to defend when he's out on the perimeter. He's figured out how to get out there further and make sure that his footwork is better. I mean, we all remember the playoff series against Golden State when Steph Curry twisted him around and, you know, got him dancing out there on the perimeter. And that's going to happen because Steph's as good as he is. But if he's going up against kind of traditional stretch bigs now, Rudy's going to go out there and he's going to do a nice job. But he also switches really well on the perimeter now and can move his feet and stay in front of people. And as long as he is and as big as he is, with a little bit of footwork, he's going to be able to do that. And yeah, Karl-Anthony Towns was still 4 of 7 last night, but I mean, was basically a non-factor and was clearly frustrated throughout that game.
Is it a lot because of his intimidation inside, you think? Do you think that plays a lot into him being the best defensive player right now? Not just, I mean, maybe he doesn't say a lot out on the court, but he says enough and he shows enough that, yeah, come and take me on. Yeah, I'm going to lose a few times, you know, in certain circumstances, I guess you could say. But on the other hand, I'm still going to intimidate you because you're going to have to shoot over me or you're going to have to go right into me. And it's not as effective. Even out there, is it because he's so intimidating that these guys know that, yeah, they can get him every once in a while, but it's not going to happen very often?
He just doesn't abandon what he does so well. And the Jazz had a couple of lapses in the third quarter where it just looked like their feet were, you know, stuck in mud and they weren't fantastic. But Rudy really just absolutely believes in the things that he can do. He does them night in and night out. He doesn't make a whole lot of mistakes. And it's not just like, oh, I'm big and I'm hard to get around, so if I plop myself in the paint, you're going to have to try and figure that out. No, he's really good. I mean, his timing is basically perfect when he's rotating over, so he's not so early that it leaves his man open for a dunk or for a lob pass, and it's not so late that the opposing team gets layups. He's just I mean, as good as defensive centers we've seen in the NBA. I mean, he is in that conversation with, you know, Dikembe Mutombo and Mark Eaton and some of these guys who have gone back historically, and Ben Wallace that have been absolutely terrific. Rudy Gobert is that quality of a defender, and his reputation is earned. You know, it's real, and I think you're right when you talk about that intimidation factor. It exists there because he is so good.
I go back to the Memphis game, and I thought about that last shot that Ja Morant put up that Rudy blocked. And what you described there was perfect because Rudy didn't come off of his guy. He stayed until, you know, they played just good enough defense on Morant that he had to twist around and then put up a little floater. And by that time, Rudy knew that Morant was committed, yeah, and then he was able to move.
Right.
And because he was able to read it perfectly and because of his quick reaction, he was able to block that shot, and then the Jazz got the opportunity to try and win it at the end. They didn't, but still, that's kind of like a small microcosm, I think, of what you're talking about.
And that's a split second. I mean,
yeah,
you're a split second too early, it's a lob pass. It's a, you know, it's an easy finish, and that's that happens all over the league. It's why, you know, Rudy Gobert abuses teams on the offensive side of the ball, because the Jazz recognize, and this is the timing he's working out with Mike Conley, that, oh, the big left Rudy too early. So there's a lob there. Or there's a shovel pass for a quick dunk. That Rudy Gobert knows it on the other side as well, just to say, you know what? You're pot committed at this point. You're either too far in the paint to pass the ball, or you're too late in the shot clock to give it up. You've got to shoot it, and I can close that space quickly because he's extremely athletic, and then B, because he's as long as any player we've ever seen.
Do you think the Jazz have also adjusted to him being able to go out farther onto the court, that the Jazz have kind of come up with a defense that if he has to go out farther onto the court, it's okay because they can adjust? I kind of got that from Quinn last night, that he was saying, you know, our defense is a lot better. These guys are being able to pick up if Rudy has to go back out on the floor. Are you seeing that too?
Some of the things that those stretch bigs that we've talked about that have killed the Jazz, we've talked about Marc Gasol in the past, who's been so good against Rudy, and then Karl-Anthony Towns. You know, one of the things that Towns did so well Monday night wasn't just that he had 7 threes, it's that he had 5 assists. So he's out there being a perimeter player and getting that many assists. That means he's catching guys, backdooring the Jazz guards or the big men, or, you know, I should say the wings, and getting layups, going to the free throw line. That's what Jeff Teague was doing. And what Rudy did was not just cut off the three-point shots, but cut off those passing lanes. I mean, there was a minute last night, or a possession last night, where you could tell Rudy closes out, jumps over a switch or jumps over a screen to get back in front of Karl-Anthony Towns, and Towns is so frustrated that Rudy is already right on him at 35 feet. I mean, he basically threw the ball at his teammate. I mean, it was almost like a spike of a bounce pass. He was so frustrated that Rudy was there. That's great. You're getting the ball out of his hands, and he's not even being able to make a play. He's having to start the offense over, you know, 12 or 15 seconds into a play, and at that point, you're basically dead. I mean, you're basically down to an isolation or a quick pick and roll, and you're not running the pick and roll right now against Rudy Gobert. He's just too good defensively.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, so we've talked about how the Jazz have played on defense. I want to now talk about the Jazz when it comes to shooting. I put in some notes. I put gunning down there,
yeah,
because you had two instances of guys who came out as gunners and they were able to find their groove. You had Bojan Bogdanović, who found, yep, it in the second quarter, kind of kept the Jazz afloat in that game.
No question.
And then you found Donovan Mitchell, who was able to find it in the fourth quarter. I thought it was really interesting. Donovan said after the game, I continue to shoot to be aggressive, because he didn't play that well early in the game when it comes to shooting. I think he said last year, this is what he said, I think last year I would have done what I would have done is probably second guess myself and not shoot as much, but I'm not shying away from it. It helps when you have everybody saying keep shooting.
Yeah.
I think everyone on the team knows that he is the guy when it comes to offense. That statement kind of, it's funny. I have two sides of me. I know he's the best player. I know that you need to get him shots, but you kind of cringe every once in a while thinking, you know, how much is it going to take for him to get out of a slump? How many times is he going to have, yeah, to shoot? Because we saw that against Minnesota on Monday night. This time, he is able to get out of that slump, and he scores, what was it, 11 points in,
yep,
the fourth quarter, I think,
yep,
he scored. And he had 3 three-pointers, I believe, in the fourth quarter. Do you think he's found that nice, comfortable edge where he's like, okay, I'm shooting too much? Or do you think he's still trying to search for that? I kind of say he's still trying to search for that. but I don't want to discourage him from shooting because he's your best offensive option, at least I think right now.
And by an enormous margin, he's your best offensive option. Now, if you could get Bojan Bogdanovic a bunch of open threes in the corner, yeah, take those. But you can't draw that play up every time. You know, teams are going to try and take away what Bojan Bogdanovic does. And in that case, you do have to go to your kind of best offensive creator, and that is by far Donovan Mitchell. So he's still rounding it into shape. I mean, it is still not a finished product, and it's probably not even close to a finished project, product, I should say, truthfully, with Donovan. But his ability to score late and take over games and hit big threes as either a spot-up shooter, which is what the two he hit in the fourth quarter were, or whether he's, you know, getting into the paint and putting a shot up or getting to the free throw line, those are all things he has to continue to do. And yes, he has to be more aggressive. And, you know, maybe it's more about trimming some of those bad shots or the, you know, the less quality shots quarters one through three than it is necessarily, hey, don't shoot the ball as much in the fourth quarter. You've got to score in the fourth. And the Jazz needed him to score in the fourth. And maybe that's what it is. It's not that he needs to be unconscious or not worry about what he's done through the first three quarters going into the fourth quarter and still have to score. Maybe he needs to clean up what he's doing in the first three quarters of the game before he gets to that fourth quarter point.
Do you think that you can do that? Can the coaches somehow come up with a plan? Can they come up with a plan so that he is not taking as bad of shots? Or is it just kind of one of those things where when you talk about cleaning up shots, I guess I think of sometimes it's just down near the shot. The shot clock is coming to an end. You need to give it to some guy. Who's your best creator on the team? It's going to be Donovan Mitchell, and he's going to put up some bad shots sometimes. I know that's not always the case, but is there a way the coaches can maybe get him cleaner looks earlier in the game?
Yes, you can drop different things. Now, the problem is the Jazz haven't been shooting all that well around Donovan Mitchell. And he's subbing out of the game at the six-minute mark and coming back in with the bench. In kind of that platoon system, and ends up playing a lot of those minutes at the end of the first quarter and the beginning of the second quarter with Emmanuel Mudiay and with Joe Ingles, who's just been bad. Joe Ingles is not playing well right now, certainly not shooting the ball well.
And he would admit it too. He's going to admit that.
And that puts a ton of pressure on Donovan Mitchell to be a scorer. So one of the things to get Donovan going is to get Joe going. You know, if Joe can start shooting the ball better, maybe that helps Donovan Mitchell and gives him a little bit more space, and then you can see more efficiency. I don't know if it's necessarily, hey, Donovan, do this or don't do that. And some of it probably is, you know, cutting down on the mid-range shots. But you also need the guys around him to start shooting the ball better.
And speaking of that, when you talk about Donovan having to maybe be a little bit more of a creator when it comes to the end of the first and the start of the second, if he's your best creator and he's out there and he is struggling, that can be really hard to have the other guys kind of bail you out every once in a while. Joe maybe feels a little bit of pressure. He's probably putting pressure on himself right now, like saying, why am I not playing as well? Also, it's interesting because you've had to change Donovan a little bit. You talked about, we've talked about in the past how Mike Conley, they decided to leave him in longer, yep, and it's kind of gotten him into a little bit better of a groove. I'm not sure that's the case with Donovan. I think that Donovan is just one of those things where he's still trying to kind of find and discover, and they're okay with him doing that with the second unit. Second unit's a whole different issue right there,
yeah,
as it is right now. Bojan, I want to talk about him. He had 30 points last night, 16 before the half, nailed some key threes in the fourth quarter. Are the Jazz getting enough out of him? I feel, again, you know how I talked about Rudy Gobert and I said, I feel like I'm being unfair to Rudy. I feel like I'm being unfair to Bojan because I think he's a good player, but it's just like, you want to take that pressure off Donovan. Who's your next best guy? You think, well, it must be Bojan.
Yeah.
But am I asking too much of him? Because I feel like I am right now, because I feel like he could do more. But when he does give you what he gives you, he's giving you a lot. That's a lot of gives right now that I just said right there. Go ahead.
He's more likely to be a guy that scores 30 points one night and 10 the next than to give you 20 every night. And I think you have to figure out how to find the difference between those two nights. And can you still win the games when he only scores 10 points? Because Jazz aren't losing games when he scores 30. You know, he did it against Sacramento. He had 33 earlier in the year. I think the Jazz won that game. He had 29 against Sacramento. He had 30 last night, and the Jazz win those games. So you have to find a way to still be a good offense when he doesn't give you 30 points. And, you know, he's averaging 20 points a game right now, and the Jazz would have taken that, you know, gladly at $17 million a year. That's a bargain, honestly, to score 20 points a game. So you're probably not getting enough every single night consistently. But over 82 games, I think you're going to be very thrilled with that production. But you do have to navigate what to do on those nights when he gives you, you know, 13 points on 3 of 12 shooting. And how do you adjust to that as an offense? Who else steps up and finds it? And, you know, it's been Mike Conley's inconsistency that has hurt the Jazz early on. He was fantastic last night, but hasn't been great throughout the season, has up nights and has down nights. It goes back to Joe Ingles needing to have bigger nights, and that's just a new offense that's trying to work itself out. And the Jazz are just the 25th, 26th ranked offense right now in the NBA, and you look at the teams below them, I mean, it's the worst teams in the NBA, so the Jazz are the worst offense of the good teams right now. I do think it's because of the newness, because of the chemistry. And I think in the fourth quarter, and you've seen it in moments this season, when it works, it's really going to work well. It's just, it might take a little while to get there.
And I was going to come in and hammer him a little bit on his passing, but I'm going to go back to that Memphis game. There were times during that game when he shot contested three-point shots, yeah, and he missed them. And I was like, why aren't you passing that? Why not make the extra pass? It's like this dichotomy you have. You have him who's taking contested threes, and then you have Joe Ingles who's wide open, and he won't take a three because he feels like he needs to make the extra pass. It's kind of like you want to talk to both of them and say, okay, you need to pass a little bit more, and you need to actually shoot a little bit more, and I think we're going to have better offensive production. On the other hand, I was going to hammer him for not passing well, and then I see he had three assists last night. And for Bojan Bogdanović, I think that's good. If you're getting him to get three assists and make the right passes at the right time, that's going to make him more effective, at least when it comes to shooting.
Yeah, he's a power forward. There's just not a lot of, I mean, you know, not a traditional. He's not Karl Malone, but that's the position he plays. You don't get a lot of assists from forwards in general, certainly not power forwards playing at that spot. So, but you're exactly right. I mean, Joe needs to keep shooting. I mean, there was a moment last night where Joe Ingles passed up a wide open three to Dante Exum. He cannot do that. You know, Joe Ingles, I know he's shooting the ball poorly right now, but his worst shooting season is going to be better than Dante Exum's best shooting season. So he's got to continue to take that. And, you know, there was a moment last night, a lot of people saw it on Twitter. Joe Ingles was walking off the floor and Quinn Snyder tried to grab him, and Joe kind of just walked past him frustrated. And Quinn honestly had to grab him, pull him back out onto the floor during a timeout, and, you know, made a joke to him of just like, it's okay, it's just basketball, you're going to be fine. Yeah, you're having maybe the worst 13 games you've had, 14 games so far since you've been with the Jazz, but he'll figure it out, and I think those numbers will get going for Joe Ingles, whether that's off the bench, whether you have to find a role for him as a starter. I'm not sure how the Jazz do it, but Joe will get started.
How much of that do you think, you talked about him giving up a wide open three so that Dante could he could pass the ball to Dante. Do you think he also has it in his mind? He's a fellow countryman. He knows he needs to get Dante kind of involved. How much do you think that's what it is? He's trying to get Dante kind of up to speed, and he's like, maybe if I pass him the ball, maybe he's going to feel a little bit more comfortable in this offense.
I mean, I think it's just Joe's natural instinct as a playmaker to make the right play and say, you know what, there's somebody who's wide open next to me, and I'm open, but he's wide open, so I'm going to kick that ball over. Sometimes that's just not the best case. You know, honestly, sometimes that's passing up a great shot for a good shot, which is the opposite of what Quinn Snyder wants to do. And you'd love to have Dante Exum get going, but, you know, Royce O'Neal never got going offensively last night. He's one of three shooting, but he was plus 38 or plus 36, I think, on the night. I don't know if you need Dante Exum to get going, and you would hope Joe Ingles recognizes that.
Before we get out of here, I know that Ben has to get out of here. We're on a time crunch here. Before we get out of here, we have to talk about the second team and the second quarters right now. Just real quickly, I was going back over the second quarters because you pointed this out in your story on KSLSports.com, and I also heard it during the broadcast last night. Jazz right now in the second quarter are not a good scoring team. Last night, they scored 22. Against Minnesota a couple nights ago, it was 24. Memphis last Friday night, 22. Before that, against the Nets, 24. They have had some good games. Against Golden State, they scored 35. Against the Sixers, they scored 32. But it's been pretty consistent that the majority of the time, they are not doing well with that second unit, or at least at the start of the second quarter. Your thoughts on that? Why there is it, again, going back to what you said, this team is still trying to find its groove on offense, and that includes the second teamers who are coming in there and trying to not mix it up, but trying to get in a groove with the guys from the first team who are still on the floor.
First, I jinxed Emmanuel Mudiay because I wrote about how through, I think, the first 8 or 9 games of the season, he'd been a positive on the floor in all but one of the games. I think it was actually in all of the games. His worst game, he was plus 2. And since then, I don't think he's had a positive plus minus since then. So I jinxed Emmanuel
Mudiay. It's all your
fault. Yeah, it might be my fault. I think the Jazz are actually missing Ed Davis, honestly, because that's a veteran player who can not do something with the ball in his hands, but can get offensive rebounds and get easy baskets. And I know he hasn't done it a ton this year, but that'll get better throughout the season as he settles in and gets more comfortable. So the Jazz are missing Ed Davis. Moutier's being asked to do a lot right now, carrying that load, and teams have scouted for him and said, hey, he's doing this better than he did last year, so we take this away, and now he's got to come back to the drawing board and readjust and get better. So that's an issue. And then, of course, Joe Ingles is just, not to harp on Ingles, but he's just shooting so poorly that that's a huge detriment to the bench right now, because he was supposed to be the offensive leader of that bench, and he's been, you know, arguably the worst offensive player there, at least from a shooting standpoint. So you've got to get Joe right, and if not, maybe you have to make a switch. And I don't know if you can swap Bojan Bogdanovic and Joe Ingles in the starting lineup to the bench. I don't know if you want to do that. It's not really how Quinn looks at it. He doesn't think, well, this is my bench, and this is my starting lineup, and we're going to stay strict to that. Maybe he readjusts the minutes a little bit to get Bojan more minutes with that second unit and Joe more minutes. You know, maybe Bojan subs out 3 minutes into the game or 4 minutes into the game the way you used to with Derek Favors last year to make sure Jay Crowder could get in, and then you could play Derek Favors with that second unit. Maybe we start to see that again this year, but if the second unit continues to be an issue and the Jazz are getting killed in the second quarter, Quinn's going to have to adjust.
And I don't have anything to back this up, but I think it would be a mistake to put Bojan on the bench, or at least to start on the bench. I think, in my opinion, he's trying to find a groove, and he needs to be in there in that starting lineup. And maybe Joe is just still adjusting to that. He's still trying to adjust to, okay, I'm a bench player again. I was like this at the start of my career, but I was able to make it into the starting lineup. The thing is that, Joe is so valuable to this team that you need him to find that groove again. And I think it's just trying to understand what his role is right now. I think he's trying to adjust. He says he accepts his role, but I think it's just like, okay, how do I get into the flow of the game when I'm coming in cold? And you're right. Maybe they just bring him in a couple of minutes earlier and that helps him out a little bit more.
You know, 14 games is also a small sample size. I mean, I think it's easy to hit the panic button because the expectations were so high. This team will get worked out. And yeah, there's adjustments you can make. Quinn Snyder's shown, though, that he's as good at doing that as anyone in the league.
Utah Jazz's weekend games. I think that a lot of people had high hopes, probably bought tickets early on, thinking, hey, Warriors are coming to town. They're not good. Hey, the Pelicans are coming to town. We want to see Zion. He's not going to be playing. I still think that these are games that the Jazz have to prepare for. I'm not saying that they shouldn't prepare. That's a stupid statement on my part. But I'm just saying they have to be wary of what they're going into these games. But I don't see the Jazz losing these two games either, Ben.
No, no one's going to lose to the Warriors right now, and truthfully, the Pelicans are much better.
All right, that's going to do it for the Jazz Notes podcast. We thank you for listening to us. We'll have more content coming up next week, and make sure you go to kslsports.com for great coverage there of the Utah Jazz and other sports. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.